This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite for October 23rd, 2009, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and as usual, we have with us Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360. Good morning, Addison.
Morning, Michael.
Well, this week we saw SGI back in the news with the company announcing two key partnerships. But first, Addison, you got the opportunity to attend a new HPC conference earlier this week. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this was the HPC 360 conference, which was no relation to Intersect 360, just an independent grabbing of the 360-degree concept in terms of they wanted to look at the industry with a 360-degree view, I guess. This was a conference that came together very quickly. It was in Champaign, Illinois, with a primary organizer. Was R Systems, and then it was co-sponsored by Dell as well as a few other partnering companies. But more importantly, R Systems is a member company of the NCMS, the National Center for Manufacturing Sciences, and NCMS helped with the organization and pulling it together very quickly in a short time frame. They had a wonderful group of attendees, both from the vendor side and from the user side, and I was pleased to not only attend myself, but also moderate a panel that covered a variety of HPC topics together with people with expertise both on the vendor side and on the user side.
Very good. I saw, taking a look at the agenda, there was some names I've seen before. Nimbus Systems was there with Robert Grable giving a talk. There was Wolfram Alpha or Wolfram Research talking about their Wolfram Alpha product. But I guess it was mainly about manufacturing was the theme. Was that basically the theme throughout the conference? Were people talking about, you know, on-the-ground applications and how they were playing out in HPC?
Yeah, I don't know if it was an official theme, but there was a lot of discussion about manufacturing and also new HPC adoption, especially in manufacturing. Partly, I think, because NCMS was one of the was helping to organize the event, and I think also with its Midwestern location, it managed to attract a lot of people associated with the manufacturing sector. Furthermore, Dr. Cynthia McIntyre from the United States Council on Competitiveness was a keynote speaker, and she gave a wonderful presentation from the COC's perspective about how HPC can be used by more companies in America and help improve the United States' competitive advantage in the worldwide landscape going forward. Furthermore, on the manufacturing side, they had people from L&L Products, from Dana Automotive, from Altair Engineering. So there was a lot of manufacturing influence into the overall agenda. It wasn't exclusively manufacturing, but it was interesting to be able to talk about how HPC can be used for innovation there.
Did they talk a lot about platforms or the challenges of getting the applications into HPC? I mean, what was sort of the issues that people were talking about? What were they complaining about, let's say?
Excellent point. You know, obviously access models were discussed in great detail, and of course Bob Graybill with Nimbus would have a lot to say about that. And then beyond that, software and scalability kind of enduring themes about how we can get more effective usage of HPC throughout the industry. In my own introductory remarks going into the panel, which was the last item on the agenda, I was able to bring in a lot of the points that have been made earlier in talking about not only the size of the market and the market opportunity, but what Intersect 360 sees as some of the primary barriers to HPC adoption, which go beyond the access to the hardware and the software to more fundamental issues like the creation of an organization's first digital models and having access to the expertise in order to bridge that gap from the work that I do at the CAD level to an entry-level CAE application? How do I do I have the expertise to create that digital model in a scalable fashion, get some learning out of it? And then, of course, the overarching both of those is, do I have the political support necessary within the organization to change the workflow, which is a fundamental shift that the organization has to make. If we say we're going to start introducing digital simulation, digital prototyping, digital testing of our products, that's a fundamental shift in workflow that we've seen firsthand some companies have to go through, but it can take years. And it was a great introduction to the panel. To on my panel, I had Brett Chouinard from Altair. I had Steve Reagan from L&L Products. I had John Riley from NCMS. I had Bill Magro, who does software solutions at Intel. All of them were able to give their insights to what it takes for that kind of adoption of getting HPC into the hands of more people, especially in manufacturing.
Right. Manufacturing is one of the sectors where they're still making that transition, especially the smaller manufacturers making the transition to HPC, and for the reasons and some of the challenges you outline there. But
yeah, we've highlighted consumer products manufacturing as a big potential growth vertical market for traditional HPC. And the reason is just because there are so many things that can be built out there that or that are manufactured. And it's worthwhile to look at what are the areas where HPC can help speed time to solution, time to market, or reduce costs for those manufacturers. I think it's a fundamental thing, though, that you don't overcook that idea and start thinking all manufacturers can benefit from HPC. Our research and studies with people in this sector have indicated that the best overlap is when you narrow it down to the manufacturers who view R&D as a enduring source of competitive advantage for their company. And that manages to hold true whether you're dealing with an automotive manufacturer or someone like Procter & Gamble. You know, if you hear someone like Tom Lang talk, it's clear that they consider R&D to be a source of competitive advantage for their company in their industry. Now, not all manufacturers think of R&D as a source of competitive advantage. A lot of them prefer to differentiate along a different dimension, like, for example, customer service, but when you do find that engineering or R&D leadership is viewed as a company's sustainable source of competitive advantage, that's where I think you can find a lot of a good source to target HPC adoption.
Right, and the thing now is the barriers to entry are lower than they've ever been, with, of course, hardware cost lowering, and now there's cloud HPC coming on board, and you know, we talked about GPUs and workstations now are powerful enough to do a lot of low-end workloads. It seems like there's just a lot going on right now that would really entice manufacturers that are interested in doing R&D to come into the HPC community.
There is a lot going on, and cloud, of course, does reduce the hardware barrier to entry. We talked a lot more about what it takes to facilitate that software and data transition of how to move from that CAD environment to that CAE environment. And that gets to the other thing you just mentioned, Michael, which is what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks with some of these workstation-oriented, whether you call it a workstation or a personal supercomputer, these integrated platforms that can support either a Windows or a Linux environment where the GPUs could be used either for rendering or for acceleration. You have a desktop or a desk side form factor, and all of this reminding me of the glory days of the traditional technical workstation that supported SGI and Sun for so long. That's a really critical platform area that can get more more people adopting entry-level HPC if you have these cluster-in-a-box solutions that, that look like workstations. And, you know, you mentioned SGI, and with the Octane 3, that's one of these areas, along with NVIDIA, Tesla, and Cray CX1. But that Octane 3, you know, the Octane line was at the heart of this when SGI was back in its salad days. And now we've got a couple of new announcements from the new SGI. They're starting to heat up post-merger, I think, in the run-up to supercomputing now, Michael. You said that we've got a couple of other new announcements from SGI.
Right. We saw them announce a storage and networking partner this week, Blue Arc and Blade Network Technologies, respectively. They're two rather prominent vendors in the HPC space. Blue Arc, of course, is the maker of the new Mercury product and Titan products. Now, the announcement around Blue Arc was their new Mercury NAS product will be now be powering SGI's new infinite storage NAS 50 and NAS 100 platforms. The Blade partnership was about the 10 gigabit E switches, and SGI will be integrating those rack switch, Ethernet switches into their cloud rack container products, their C2 and X2 products. And they'll also, I think, they're going to be reselling the rack switch products with their rack mount servers. So yeah, they announced these sort of big partnerships this week, and we're seeing that actually across the industry, where people are starting to sort of pick partners and divide up who they want to dance with as sort of storage and networking gets more and more specialized, and people are not doing these things in-house anymore. I think SGI is part of that trend, and they recognize that they're going to need, you know, strategic partnerships to play with the big boys if they want to play in the cloud space and the HPC space like everybody wants to do these days, like all their competitors are doing. So I think that's what's behind these announcements here.
Well, yeah, you're right on with respect to the consolidation in the industry, Michael, and that is something that we've been looking forward to in the industry, in particular with regards to storage and networking. Let's talk about the networking aspect of this first with Blade Networking Technologies. You see that opening some other opportunities for SGI?
Well, sure. I mean, on 10 gigabit Ethernet, I think is going to play in both the enterprise space and the general enterprise space in HPC, but especially on the general side, it's going to be cloud computing, and even on the HPC side, it's cloud computing. So it's going to be a big part of that application set. And in HPC traditional, there's going to be a lot of 10 gigabit Ethernet, I think, coming on board for applications that just don't need the level of performance that QDR InfiniBand is giving them. So I think we're going to see it in both spaces. So 10 gigabit Ethernet, I'm looking to sort of come into its own in 2010. So I think that's why we're seeing SGI sort of make this move now. Now Blade is one of sort of these up and coming switch vendors. They're fairly new. I think they're only 2 or 3 years old, but they've already got nearly half of the Blade switch market, which they've sort of specialized in. So a lot of vendors have already attached them: IBM, HP, NEC, Verari, and now SGI. So like I said, people are picking their partners, and Blade's in a good position to do that because they sort of got into this early, and they've got what looks like very decent products, and they're specializing in blades, which are, of course, becoming more popular as people look for denser configurations. So I think it's definitely good news for Cray and good news for Blade, and I think probably a good move for SGI.
Yeah, the thing I look at with regards to that is, you know, when Rackable acquired SGI, one thing we talked about was that strategically that they would probably be looking to combine Rackable's traditional expertise in more of these edge HPC, ultra-scale data center types of environments with SGI's traditional strengths in the traditional HPC supercomputing market. And this play with Blade Network Technologies. It seems like it can help them with some ultra-scale facilities, especially in these cloud types of environments. So it seems to be strategically consistent with that notion.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is. And since basically Cisco is now its own system vendor, people aren't really looking at Cisco anymore as sort of the go-to vendor to buy switches from. So then that puts Blade and some of the other 10 gig switch vendors in a good position. So it's sort of a logical move here now that Cisco has sort of defined its or supersized its own aspirations in the system space to bring on these other vendors. So yeah, everybody's getting into this space one way or another, and like I said, the partnerships are becoming quite important, and I think that's what we're seeing here. Now on the storage side, it's a little bit different. SGI has always had a sort of complex in-house storage set of offerings, and this they've just decided to sort of add to it and enhance it with sort of an external vendor here. And it's just right now for two products, their NAS 50 and NAS 100 platforms. But this could turn into something bigger. I mean, BlueArc has the Titan product line, which is the bigger product line. So that could end up being part of the SGI product line too at some point. I don't know how much SGI wants to go it alone in storage as far as keeping developing in-house storage products. They're not that big a company, and I think they sort of have to pick their areas of expertise. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them rely more and more on third-party storage vendors to start supplying these things. And BlueArc's now in a pretty good position to do that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that kind of positioning for SGI.
Well, yeah, I think it's a question of where does SGI want to differentiate itself, and what they're looking at here is bringing in partners for scalable storage. And BlueArc is a company that I've liked for a while now because I think they're doing some innovative things with regards to FPGA acceleration of the NFS traffic. The bigger thing that this highlights to me, though, is beyond the storage hardware, what are the ramifications in the file system market, where we're looking at PNFS should be into beta shortly, and the as we've talked about before, the future of Lustre is a little bit cloudy right now in the midst of the Oracle Sun deal, SGI of course was behind CXFS, and which was very popular among the people who did install it, but with SGI having been on the decline, CXFS never really took off as a standard. So there was a question of where SGI would wind up in the file system game, and I think this gives SGI ultimately an interesting scalable file system play, potentially with PNFS.
Right, I think PNFS is going to be something that all the vendors with storage solutions are going to rally around, whether they keep, proprietary file system systems or not. I think they're going to have to offer PNFS if not sooner than later, because I think it will become the standard. So, and it's going to, everybody's going to basically compete on that playing field. So yeah, we might see these proprietary file systems go on for a while. Lustre, like you said, that's got a lot of momentum behind it, but we don't know sort of the future of that, since it's hooked onto a company now that has an uncertain future. But PNFS, I think, has a much more certain future, I think, in the long term. So I think you will see people in the system storage space sort of rally around that.
You know, it occurs to me, Michael, that what we might be seeing here is, while the storage landscape is consolidating, it could be that the networking space is wide open with respect to Ethernet, because you've got the InfiniBand players all in there with Ethernet solutions as well, and you've got Cisco kind of backing off. There might be a lot of interesting dynamics to watch here in the weeks ahead as we go into supercomputing.
Right. The networking space is a lot more complex, I think, in a way, as far as the set of technologies being offered. I mean, we see converged Ethernet coming into the future, and that's going to be a standard, but we don't know how that's going to play out in either the cloud space or the HPC space proper. So there's sort of a lot of competing technologies, and then people are looking for, obviously, price performance here. So it's not like you can pick like the most common, you know, global solution and put that in. And of course, there's InfiniBand, and that's going to, you know, that's going to go on regardless of what happens in the Ethernet side. So yeah, that's a tougher nut to crack, I think, for HPC vendors. I think we're going to see a lot of diversity of solutions out there in the next year or so.
A lot for us to look forward to as we start sifting through announcements having to do with supercomputing.
Yep, that's just coming up in 3 weeks. And
3 weeks.
I'm already starting to hear rumblings of different announcements. So I think it's going to be a fun ride up to supercomputing and then the show itself.
Great. Excellent, Michael. And I look forward to talking to you again next week.
Look forward to talking to you too, Addison.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.